Brilliant, thank you. Am I on?
Yes.
Fantastic. Right, so we have been looking at our discipleship pathway and the practice of practicing the Sabbath. If that is indeed a sentence, I'm not quite sure. But the first rhythm that we've been thinking about is Sabbath and practicing Sabbath rest. So I thought I'd start off by asking you, how many of you here have broken the fourth commandment this week? For those of you that are not sure what the fourth commandment is, you shall do no work one day of the week. How many of you, you don't have to put your hands up and confess, I wonder how many of you here have actually taken a 24-hour break from work at some point this week? You're retired. And you've been on holiday, yes. Well, so we're thinking about Sabbath rest and what that means and what that looks like. We've been preaching about it. Before we started the service, when we were praying, one of the images that Kim had was of a double helix. Do you know the DNA double helix, twisted kind of helix thingy? Do you know what I mean? Kind of, oh, come on. You're either all dead or not listening. You're on your phones. That's what it is. So this picture of the DNA that actually all of us were created by God, and we were created to image something of who He is, and that as part of that, we're designed and made to rest. If you look at the creation story in Genesis, human beings were made on the sixth day. And on the seventh day, God rested. So the very first things that human beings did was rest. So part of our makeup, part of our DNA as human beings is to be people that practice the Sabbath. We're living in a culture and a society where that is becoming increasingly difficult. Let me share with you a story. A boat docked in a tiny Mexican village, and an American tourist complimented the Mexican fisherman on the quality and quantity of his fish and asked how long it took him to catch them. "Not very long," answered the Mexican. "Well, then why didn't you stay out longer and catch more fish?" asked the American. And the Mexican explained that his small catch was sufficient to meet his needs and those of his family. So the American turned to him and he asked, "But what do you do with the rest of your time?" "I sleep late, fish a little, play with my children, and take a siesta with my wife. In the evenings, I go into the village to see my friends. I play the guitar, I sing a few songs. I have a full life." The American interrupted, "I have an MBA from Harvard, and I can help you. You should start by fishing longer every day. You can then sell the extra fish you catch, and with the extra revenue, you can buy a bigger boat. With the extra money from the larger boat that will bring you, you can buy a second one and a third one, and on until you have an entire fleet of trawlers. Instead of selling your fish to a middleman, you'll be able to negotiate directly with the processing plants and maybe eventually open your own plant. You can then leave this little village and move to Mexico City or Los Angeles or even New York. From there, you can direct your huge enterprise." "How long would that take?" asked the Mexican. 20, perhaps 25 years," replied the American. "And after that?" "Afterwards, now that's when it starts to get really interesting," answered the American, laughing. "When your business gets really big, you can start selling stocks and make millions." "Millions? Really? And what about after that?" "After that, you'll be able to retire. Live in a tiny village near the coast. Sleep late, play with your children, catch a few fish, take a siesta with your wife, spend evenings drinking and enjoying your friends." We live in a culture today that tells us there's always something more, something better, something else that will make us happy if we can take hold of it. Whatever it happens to be, the latest Apple product, iPhone, iPad, a big screen TV, a Ferrari, a bigger house in a better part of Harrogate. There's always something else, something more. You see, we're conditioned by the culture that we live in to a practice of more. More money, bigger house, better holiday, further afield somewhere in the world. A culture that is continually ingrained in and our way of thinking, a practice of more. There's got to be more. So I wonder, is there a practice from Jesus to retrain our hearts from this cultural practice of more? Well, yes, of course there is. And surprise, surprise, it's the practice of the Sabbath. You see, the rhythm of rest was built into creation. We've talked about that in the last few weeks. But unlike the rhythm of our culture, which is always to work more, buy more, repeat. Work more, work longer, buy more, repeat. That culture and that practice of desiring more, the next thing, it shapes who we are. But the practice of the Sabbath is designed to retrain our hearts, to retrain our thinking, to shape us in a different way. Work is a good thing. It says, work 6 days, then rest on the seventh. Work and rest are in a symbiotic relationship. If all you do is work, you grind yourself into the ground. Similarly, if all you do is rest, then your life becomes empty of meaning and of purpose and significance. Overwork and underwork rob us of the capacity to live out our identity and purpose and meaning in the way that God has created each of us to be. So we've looked at this idea of Sabbath as a rhythm. Tonight we're going to be thinking about Sabbath as resistance. Now I've got two readers. Would they like to pop down the front here with their Bibles? That's you, Mrs. Watts. And we're going to have two short readings. Can you go first, Julia? Tell us where the reading's coming from as well.
So this reading comes from Exodus 20, the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son nor daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy.
And the second reading is from Deuteronomy chapter 5, from verse 12. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and work, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. Neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor the alien within your gates, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day.
Brilliant, thank you. You can sit down. Who knew that the Ten Commandments appeared twice in the Bible? Exodus chapter 20 and Deuteronomy chapter 5. They occur to two different people groups. So the Ten Commandments were written to the people in Exodus 20 and then to a different group of people in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Two different generations. The Exodus generation was the first generation that came out of slavery in Egypt. Do you remember right back at the beginning of Exodus? The Israelites had been enslaved by the Egyptians. They'd been working for them with no rest, no work, no money, no pay. They are enslaved by their Egyptian rulers. And they were commanded to build bricks. To build bricks so that the Egyptians would have bigger, fancier cities to live in. And in order to supply them with all the needs that they had. That was their job. The Egyptian people were in slavery. And so this first set of Ten Commandments is written to a people that have been freed from slavery in Egypt. And that these Ten Commandments were given to them at Mount Sinai. The Deuteronomy generation was the children of the first lot of people that have been taken out of slavery in Egypt. But this second generation had grown up wandering around the desert for 40 years. They had never been slaves like their parents before them in Egypt, and they'd been wandering around in the desert for 40 years, waiting to reach the promised land that God had for them. So there's 40 years written between Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. The second generation were those wandering around in the desert. They'd never been slaves like their parents before them. So two different generations, two different contexts. Did you notice that there are two significant differences for the way that those commandments are written to the people in Exodus and the people in Deuteronomy? My guess is that you probably didn't notice, so I'm going to point them out to you just in case. The first difference is that in Exodus, the commandment is remember the Sabbath. And in Deuteronomy, it says observe the Sabbath. The second difference is the way that these two commandments finish. So in the Exodus, the motivation for remembering the Sabbath is because God rested after creation. That's the reason that they are to remember the Sabbath, because God rested in creation. In Deuteronomy, the motivation is remember that your parents were slaves in Egypt. So in Exodus, it's remember. In Deuteronomy, it's observe. In Exodus, it's because it's rooted in the creation story, and in Deuteronomy, it's rooted in the redemption story. Now, as with all practices, it's really crucial that we understand the motivation behind the law or the discipline or the practice for that matter. It's the why. Why do we observe this? Why do we need to know? Otherwise, just by obeying the law is in danger of just becoming another means of enslaving us. So we need to understand what the motivation is. So, in Exodus, the practice of the Sabbath is grounded in the story of creation and the rhythm of rest that is ingrained into the way that God created and made the world. In Deuteronomy, the rationale for practicing the Sabbath is because it's grounded in the redemptive story of how God rescued the people from slavery and brought them out into a new place. In Exodus, at Mount Sinai, it's about a rhythm. But in Deuteronomy, it's about resistance. So in Exodus at Sinai, it's an invitation to delight in God, in His world, in all that He has made, in all that is beautiful and good and true of your life. But in Deuteronomy, it's a warning to that generation to never go back to Egypt and the place of enslavement. The story of the Israelites in Exodus is that Pharaoh was a vicious tyrant. No matter how hard the Israelites worked, it was never enough. They were enslaved and required to produce more and more bricks for Pharaoh's building projects. to supply and build his supply cities in order to supply the needs of the Egyptian people. They were always hungry for more and more and more. The Hebrews lived under this yoke of more, more, more. The Egyptian appetite was insatiable. There was never enough food, never enough drink, never enough services or nice houses to live in. So they were continually demanding more from the people, the Israelite people who were their slaves. Does this remind you of anything today? Any situation, any culture? Is it ringing any bells for you? So you see, this command in Deuteronomy is to remember the story of their parents, because their story is that their parents' story is their story. And God's reminding them, remember, your parents have been set free and you have been set free from slavery. You are no longer slaves. You're no longer living in Egypt. You've got a new king. You're part of a new kingdom. There's no quota of bricks that's being required of you. No cities to build, no tasks to complete. No taskmaster to satisfy and keep happy. So do you see how practicing the Sabbath is a reminder to the Israelites of their true identity? They are no longer slaves. They are no longer enslaved to Pharaoh. They are no longer required to work harder and longer hours to provide more and more and more. I wonder if any of you have come across that NatWest advert. It says, "We are what we do." People, it's a lie. You are not what you do. You are not what you produce. Your worth and value are not tied up in what you do. That is living in slavery like the Israelites were, where they are enslaved to the Egyptians. You have been set free from that and you are no longer slaves. You are not what you do. You are children of God. That is your identity. Sabbath is a weekly reminder to the Israelites of their true identity. It was a signal to the watching world that Israel was different from all the other nations around them. They would operate and live in a different way with a different rhythm. Practicing the Sabbath was a statement: we will be different. It was a subversive practice. It's like a line in the sand. We will not return to Egypt. We will not become Egypt. We will not return to slavery because we have been set free. And so we will live out our freedom, and we will practice that by keeping the Sabbath holy. I believe that more than ever before, we need to be people that are practicing the Sabbath. Why? Because Pharaoh and Egypt are alive and well here in Harrogate in the 21st century. In our Walter Brueggemann, a great theologian, wrote this: in our own contemporary context of the rat race of anxiety, the celebration of Sabbath is an act of both resistance and alternative. It is resistance because it's a visible insistence that our lives are not defined by the production and consumption of commodity goods. Our lives are not defined by the production and consumption of commodity goods. So keeping the Sabbath is a way of resisting our culture that is drawing us into this consumptive behavior and mindset. It's a way of drawing us into saying, you've always got to want more. And I mean, that's what the advertising world is built on, trying to make you dissatisfied with what you have in order that you would want more, so that you go out to try and get hold of it, to consume, to take hold of more and more stuff. Sabbath is drawing a line in the sand and saying, enough is enough. I will not be shaped by the culture in which I live. I will not allow it to take hold of me and to seep into the way that I think and behave and live out my life. There is more to life than accomplishment and accumulation. Sabbath is an act of resistance and an act of rebellion. It's a way of saying with your body, your mind, your soul, every part of your being, enough. It's a way of breaking hold of that addiction to want more, to accumulate more stuff. It's a way of breaking hold of the desire for more promotion, better pay, different job, whatever it happens to be, stuff, recognition, wealth. It's all designed to draw you into this addictive behavior of wanting more and more. And it's subtly causing us to be dissatisfied with what you currently have. Sabbath is a practice that helps to move our heart away from being enslaved to greed and discontentment and restlessness, but rather to be free, to live in a place of gratitude, contentment, satisfaction, peace, restfulness. Accomplishment and accumulation are not evil, but there is a limit. At some point, you need to draw a line in the sand and say, enough, no more. Not only is Sabbath defiance to slavery, but it's a solution to fatigue, anxiety, burnout. It's a time when we proclaim with our words and our actions that God is good. That God is God and we are not. And the world will continue just fine without us for a 24-hour period. Sabbath is a day of rest and of worship. A holy day given to God's people so that they can be reminded of their true identity and live out their full humanity. Sabbath is not simply a day to not work, but it's a day to delight in the life that you've carved out in partnership with God, and to delight yourself in God Himself. Sabbath, I would say, is probably the most vital practice for us today, living in Harrogate in the 21st century. If we want to break the hold that culture has over us, practicing the Sabbath is an act of resistance that says, enough, no more. My challenge to you and my encouragement to you is, on the Sabbath, is to stop a whole load of stuff. Screen time, Facebook, Twitter, emails. Do no work. I wonder how many of you here can genuinely say, I've not worked one day of the week. How many of you have checked your emails just to see whether someone needs you to respond to something? Whether you thought about something, whether you've even thought about a work situation when you're not at work, a work relationship. This applies to school and you young people as well. The pressures that are being placed on you to study and to work are immense. How many of you take a 24-hour period where you'll say, I'll do no schoolwork at all? Nothing. I won't think about it. I won't do anything. I'm going to chill out. I'm going to think about God. I'm going to have fun with my family. I'm going to watch the TV. I'm going to play on the Xbox. I don't know what it is, but I wonder how many of you have really stopped schoolwork for a 24-hour period. I'm going to draw to a close now, but I think that what my challenge to us is, I wonder how many of you here need to be set free from the hold that culture has over you to keep working in the way that you think you ought to be working. You kind of need to be set free from this hold that culture has over you so that you have the courage to be able to, and the strength to be able to step out and start practicing this Sabbath rhythm. I'm not quite sure what the band are going to do. Oh, have you got something?
Yeah.
Okay, come up.
I think we need to come.